Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. Welcome to a special Wednesday edition of the Weekly Worldview. I was sitting around minding my own business last week when I got the bat signal that it was time for your humble host to hit the road and go try to make some money. And so I did just that. But that precluded me from coming to you this past Sunday night. And for all we know, it may preclude you from hearing me again this coming Sunday night. So we figured we better get into the studio. And we better give you the news of the day, of the week. Because if we don't, we're going to start losing the audience. You're going to start losing faith that I just might not show up. And I might not come back. But that's not it. I do care about you. I am thinking about you. But when the bad signal comes in, sometimes I've just got to hit the road and go out there and try to make some scratch to keep the McBurney compound functioning around here. And so that's what happened. So we're coming to you midweek. We may or may not be with you this coming Sunday. I'll try to give you some warning. I suppose I could try to give the people some kind of warning if I have to head out, if the bat signal comes in. I was going to do the show yesterday, but I ended up petitioning down at the big IRS tax protest by all the Tea Party folks down there. So again, I was precluded by events beyond my control. So, but we're glad to be with you this Wednesday. And glad to have you aboard. I'm going to start. Boy, there's so much news this week. I had to get into the studio. I would have been remiss had I not come to you. We're going to start Dateline Rome. Rome, that's in Italy for all of you products of the government schools. Rome, Italy, from the Associated Press. The Food Agriculture Organization, whatever that is, the FAO, the Food Agriculture Organization has hailed the likes of grasshoppers, ants, and other members of the insect world as an underutilized food for people and livestock and pets. So this is a new UN report from the UN. That's the agency there, the Food and Agriculture Organization, is an UN agency headquartered in Rome. And they say members of the insect world, could be used by people to supplement their diets. Yeah, they say insects are high in protein and minerals, and they have a small environmental footprint. Well, they're insects, so of course they have a small environmental footprint. No, I guess they don't produce a lot of greenhouse gases, unlike beans, which produce a lot of greenhouse gases. Anyway, did you know that insect farming takes place right now? But it's primarily used for fish bait at the moment. But the UN is eyeing bugs. The UN says mechanization of insect farming could ratchet up production. Yeah, and it could be more than fish bait. That's what they could be feeding to the socialized world of the future. This is the socialist mindset. In a utopian socialist unworld, we would all be eating bugs, and we wouldn't have any guns, and we would all be homos. Yeah. They say insects, what do they say here? Insects are rich in copper, iron, magnesium, manganese, phosphorus, selenium, and zinc. And they're also a good source of fiber, which we know is important. Yeah. The UN agency has what they've titled the Edible Insect Program. And they're also examining the potential of arachnids. That's spiders. And scorpions. Yeah. And for those of you who graduated and matriculated in the government school system, arachnids are not insects. No. I don't know how they are on phosphorus, selenium, zinc, magnesium, and manganese, but they're not insects. And I don't know how tasty they are. I've never eaten a spider. Let's see. The report noted that some caterpillars in southern Africa and some ant eggs are considered delicacies already, and they command high prices, high market prices, which that probably annoyed the Un, knowing that there's already a free market trade in bugs for eating. Anyway, finally, some people who might not entertain the thought of consuming insects might already be eating them, as many insects are ingested inadvertently. Yes, primarily by bikers, especially out here in Colorado. You see all the bikers running around, driving around, inadvertently consuming the next great food source, according to the United Nations. Talk about spread the misery, for crying out loud. To figure out better ways to raise better beef, pork, veal. What's the other one? Lamb? We're not big fans of lamb here at the chicken. McBurney compound. Oh, yeah, chickens. We like chickens. Grouse, dove, fish. Rabbits, fish. Not tilapia. Fish except tilapia. They're right there with the bugs. Tilapia, bottom feeders. Anyway, if you do like tilapia, we're sorry that we've insulted you. I hope you'll get over it. All right, so that's it for the lighthearted news of the day, okay? The fact that the Un wants us to all start eating bugs, to be miserable together, give up our guns, and all become queers. That's it. Now we get the serious news, ladies and gentlemen. This is from the... Oh, by the way, that story came to us from Fox News in New York, the local Fox affiliate there, to give credit where credit is due. Now let's go to the LA Times. Vermont has become the fourth state in America to allow doctors to kill terminally ill patients. Yes, it's the culmination of a decade-long effort by mentally deranged suicidal children who have taken over the country, the legislatures, especially in Vermont. And now doctors can kill terminally ill patients, people who are depressed, people who are poor, people who are a burden on the system and feel like they're a burden on their families and they're depressed about it. Now doctors can kill them. Vermont is the first state, according to the LA Times, to pass such a law through the legislative process. I was down petitioning for personhood. We want to change the law in Colorado so that the laws against murder and assault apply equally to unborn children as they do to, well, say you or I. The laws that protect us from the madman in the streets. So we want to change the law, and a Republican down there at the Tea Party protest told me he couldn't sign because he felt like something like that should originate in the legislature. And that's why he wouldn't sign. I said, well, do you believe an unborn child is a person? He said, I do. I said, are you pro-life? He said, I am. I said, well, don't you want to give the people the opportunity to vote yes or no on this? He said, I believe that should originate in the legislature. That's the proper process. So he didn't sign. I said, you're waiting for the legislature? I said, it's Colorado. The legislature's full of potheads, queers, and communists. I said, you're going to be waiting a long time for the legislature. He said, I'll wait. Oh. I said, well, we've been waiting on the Supreme Court for 40 years. We've been waiting on the Republican Party for over 40 years, and now there's 50 million people dead, but you're obsessed with the process. Thanks a lot. Anyway, we have a quote here on Vermont's new doctors can kill their patients law. This is a quote from Barbara Coombs Lee. She's the president or a spokes dyke or something for a group called Compassion and Choices.
Compassion.
So, yeah, the Orwellian name there. Compassion and Choices. So they've legalized the killing of innocent people by medical doctors, and they call themselves Compassion and Choices. She says this is an historic achievement. It's a political breakthrough that will boost support for death with dignity bills nationwide. Well, I can't disagree with the president of the Orwellianly named Compassion Choices. This will boost support amongst the ignorant, stupid, suicidal class, which grows every day. A product of your government schools. That class grows every day. And that this will be a breakthrough. It will boost support for laws legalizing what they euphemistically call assisted suicide. But it's really doctors killing innocent people. That's what it's really all about. Not to put too fine a point on it, but that's what it's about. Let's get to the details, since process is very important. Under the bill, a qualifying patient must be at least 18 years old, a Vermont resident, and suffering from an incurable and irreversible disease with less than 6 months to live. Two physicians, including the prescribing doctor, must make that medical determination. The patient must also be told of other end-of-life services, including comfort care and palliative care, hospice care, and pain control. And then you can kill them. It's very well-regulated murder, which we've become very good at here in America. A well-regulated murderocracy is what we're living in these days, ladies and gentlemen. A well-regulated murderocracy. All right. So there we have it. Well, now let's go to the justice file. It used to be the justice file, but in America, the justice system is now just a system, so this is just a file. Dateline Denver, Colorado. Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper has delayed the execution of convicted killer Nathan Dunlap, citing his doubts about the death penalty. Well, Governor, if you have any doubts about the death penalty, it works. In fact, every time it's tried, they die. But he has doubts. Hickenlooper, according to 9 News here in Colorado, granted Nathan Dunlap an indefinite reprieve. The reprieve will stay in place until Hickenlooper or another governor lifts it. Governor Hicks says it's unlikely he will ever allow the execution of Nathan Dunlap, who murdered 4 people and wounded another at a Denver area Chuck E. Cheese restaurant in 1993. One of the first headline mass murders, at least in my memory. I had just moved to Colorado. This was my welcome to Colorado, where mass murder is in vogue. And, of course, that's been getting more and more in vogue over the past 20 years since Nathan Dunlap, in front of God and everybody, and there's no doubt about it, folks, shot and killed 4 people, wounded another at Chuck E. Cheese. He did it. Everyone in the restaurant said he did it. He was duly convicted, and now he will be allowed to live. Hicks says, quote, "I'm deeply respectful of the suffering and the loss that occurs." Occurs? Occurs. He said occurs, not occurred, okay? And to me, who's that psychologist? It's a Freudian slip. Because right now, he's inflicting suffering and loss upon the families. And so it's concurrent with what you're doing. It's concurrent with the suffering that they're already experiencing, Mr. Hickenlooper. And deep down in your dark little black heart and what's left of your minuscule conscience, you know that, and it slips out through your festering lips. Hickenlooper said, quote, "But it's hard to see from a system-wide perspective the benefit of a capital punishment system if it results in 15 to 20 years of legal process and parole and creates and extends emotional hardship for the families." Unquote. Mr. Hickenlooper, that you've just made the case for killing the bastard sooner, not in delaying his execution permanently, you ignorant, filthy heathen. This man is not qualified to sit in the seat that he occupies as the governor. Unbelievable. So he's a walking contradiction, a talking contradiction, admits he's inflicting suffering and loss upon the victims, and yet he goes through, as I predicted, by the way, a sad prediction. I'm sad that this prediction came true. I had hoped that perhaps I was just so jaded and angry that I believed Hickenlooper would never execute Nathan Dunlap. But it's not that I'm just jaded and angry. I am those things. But I'm also correct about Governor Hickenlooper in that he is a killer, Hickenlooper is. He's responsible for the deaths of thousands of people every year in the state of Colorado, innocent people, as he presides over a government that endorses and promotes the murder of innocent people, by medical doctors, by the way, in abortion clinics. So he's a killer. And he could not reconcile the fact that, well, with him being a murderer, how could he possibly sentence a murderer to death? And so he's not done it, as I predicted. District Attorney George Brockler, who represented the district where the Chuck E. Cheese massacre occurred, he represents the district where the Chuck E. Cheese massacre occurred, he held an afternoon demonstration on the Capitol steps. He said Hickenlooper's decision was not justice. And he accused the governor of shrugging off his responsibility. Here's what the DA said. He said, "One person will go to bed with a smile on his face tonight, and that's Nathan Dunlap. And that's due to one person, Governor Hickenlooper." Yeah. I'm so upset that I need a blood pressure pill or something. This makes me... Hickenlooper says Colorado's capital punishment system is flawed and that the state doesn't have the drugs in place to carry out the execution by lethal injection. Well, Mr. Hickenlooper, I'd be willing to do it with a baseball bat or my bare hands. Well, maybe not my bare hands, because Nathan Dunlap, in 20 years, he's gotten pretty big and muscular there in prison. I would prefer to have a baseball bat. But if you don't have the drugs on hand, Mr. Hickenlooper, I'm sure that you could recruit from the families of the victim someone willing to step in and pick up where the lack of drugs left off. But Mr. Hickenlooper doesn't want to kill him because Hickenlooper's a killer. Hickenlooper's a murderer. Our government is being run by mad, suicidal, homosexual killers. Well, I know you say Governor Hick is married, he's not a homosexual. Hey, if you harbor homosexuals, you are a homosexual in my book. It's the McBurney Doctrine. If you promote it, you are it. All right. So in Vermont and three other states, doctors can murder the innocent. While in Colorado, the state cannot execute the guilty. Ladies and gentlemen, something's got to give. We care a lot. We care a lot about the gambling and the pressures and the deeds. We care a lot about the smack and crack and whack that hit the street. We care a lot about the welfare of all you boys and girls. We care a lot about you people, because we're out to save the world. Yeah. This is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for joining us this week. Something's got to give, and that something very well may be Islamism. From the Daily Mail today, out of the United Kingdom. That's England for all of you who matriculated as government mules at the government schools. From the Daily Mail... A man videotaped the hacking to death of a British soldier, the man with bloodied hands carrying knives and ranting, "We swear by Almighty Allah we will never stop fighting you." That's what he shouted. He appeared on the video after an active duty British soldier was hacked to death in the street by two men just a couple hundred yards from an army barracks right there in the streets. The two men are thought to have waited for around 20 minutes until police officers arrived, and then the men had tried to attack them. But they were shot by the policemen, who happened to be armed with guns. They apparently shouted, "Allahu Akbar," which means Allah is great in Arabic. And they filmed the attack so they could put it up on YouTube. The two men have been arrested, so they weren't killed, unfortunately. Folks, I worried when I go back to Fort Hood, and I had the sneaking suspicion then that the Islamists, not being able to pull off grand, massive terrorist attacks anymore, may revert to an evolving tactic of smaller terror events. And it seems to be coming to pass. This event was foreshadowed at Fort Hood. It was foreshadowed at the Boston Marathon and the bombing there. Individual terrorists just wreaking havoc and terror upon smaller populations, but generally shaking the confidence of an entire nation when they kill our citizens, butcher men in the streets. Apparently, they beheaded the British soldier. Okay, so from one terrorist to another, from one death sentence waived to another, Dr. Kermit Gosnell, according to CNN, although he was convicted on three counts of murder for killing babies by cutting their spinal cords with scissors, the next phase of the case, the penalty phase, will not be going forward. Why? Because Kermit Gosnell made a deal with prosecutors to save them time, money, and paperwork in exchange for his life, and they took the deal. According to a statement from the office of the Philadelphia District Attorney, Gosnell agreed to waive all his appellate rights in exchange for life in prison, without the possibility of parole, instead of the death penalty. And so because he saved the state millions of dollars, mountains of paperwork, and lots of time when the lawyers could be out playing golf and soliciting prostitutes, he gets to keep his life. My blood pressure is very bad at this point, ladies and gentlemen. It's no wonder Islamism is on the rise. It's just no wonder. How confused can we be? We butcher the innocent, and we allow the guilty to live. And in Islam, they butcher the innocent and the guilty together. So at least they have some standards in Islam. Here in America, our government, our politicians, our leaders, the ruling class, have absolutely no standards for anything whatsoever, except the aforementioned golf and prostitutes. That's their value system. It's based on that theorem. The interchange of golf and prostitutes are what rule the minds of the American judicial system, the ruling class, and for the most part, the electorate as well. It's disgusting. Let's go to a story that may lower my blood pressure. From the Science, really? File. Adrian Raine is a scientist of sorts. This is an update on a story we did a few weeks ago. He calls himself a neurocriminologist, and he wanted to study criminal behavior and try to find out if there was a biological basis for criminal behavior. So he left England back in the 80s, and he moved to America. He says he headed for California partly because, quote, there were more murderers to study there than anywhere else in the world. So he moved. Anyway, he was a student of Richard Dawkins, was Adrian Raine, and he's convinced that there must be an all-embracing influence of evolution on criminal behavior, says Adrian Raine, student of Richard Dawkins. And so he's gone looking for this biological evolutionary link to criminal behavior. So naturally he comes to America, California in particular, to study it. In his most comprehensive study on neurocriminology, back in 1994, he conducted positron emission tomography scans of 41 convicted killers, and he paired them with a normal control group of 41 people, similar in age and profile. He recorded in his study that the murderers' brains showed what appeared to be a significant reduction in the development of the prefrontal cortex. That is the part of the brain right behind the forehead that controls executive function. And he found that it was significantly reduced in development in the brains of murderers. And so naturally, being a student of evolution and of Richard Dawkins and a product of the modern decaying Western education system, he assumes that the biological link must be related to our evolutionary past. Well, I beg to differ, doctor, if indeed you are a doctor. I'm not sure a neurocriminologist could be classified as a doctor, although I have no doubt that this fellow has a PhD in something. Mr. Raine, I would posit the idea that where you think that this is about genetics and evolution, I think that the practice of wickedness, the regular practice and exercise of wickedness, may very well cause biologically evident deformation of the brain. That's what I think. Yeah, in the forehead particularly. I think it's all biblical. I don't think it's evolutionary at all. As a matter of fact. And I don't even claim to be a doctor. I'm just a talk show host. A part-time talk show host at that. And that's my theory on it. And if you disagree, well, send me an email or write a letter to Adrian Raine, this doctor. I'd be happy to debate it with you. Anyway, anyone who studied under Richard Dawkins and believes in evolution, I will posit right now that I'm smarter than you and I barely made it out of high school. Barely. And I'm already smarter than you are. All right, now speaking of people that I'm smarter than, let's go to Chris Wallace and Dan Pfeiffer. Yeah, we're going to go to Fox News. Now, very rarely do I allow other people's audio to roll in my program. Typically, I take care of that by doing, serviceable impressions of people. But this week, I have actual audio because I was literally stunned by what I saw on Fox News Sunday last Sunday. And I'm rarely stunned by anything I see on the morning news shows, the Sunday morning news shows, because I never watch them. But I happened to be getting up early on Sunday morning to go to work, and there it was. Chris Wallace interviewing Dan Pfeiffer, who I never heard of or seen before. And I can tell you what the appearance of Dan Pfeiffer reminds me of. It reminds me of Watergate, when Nixon started feeding his various subordinates to the wolves. And there was a different one, because you can only go out and lie for so long before you begin to lose so much credibility that it becomes counterproductive. And that's where Carney is. What's his name? Jay Carney. Thank you. That's where Jay Carney is. He's to the point of ridiculous. And so they had to have someone else go out. So they sent out this guy, Dan Pfeiffer. Never heard of him, never saw him. May never see him again. He may be buried in the Rose Garden by now, for all we know. Anyway, he goes on Chris Matthews' show, and he was asked what I think is the biggest question in the Benghazi affair, the Benghazi scandal. And so instead of me trying to explain it to you, let me show. I've cut the interview down to under a minute, partially for time and partially just to serve my own partisan interests. And so let's roll tape of is Chris Wallace interviewing Obama spokesmouth Dan Pfeiffer.
Question: what did the president do the rest of that night to pursue Benghazi?
The question here is not what happened that night. The question is, what are we going to do to move forward and ensure that this doesn't happen again?
With due respect, you didn't answer my question. What did the president do that night?
He was kept up to date throughout the day.
Do you not know whether he was in the situation?
I don't remember what room the president was in on that night. That's a largely irrelevant fact.
The president at 4 o'clock in the afternoon says to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, deploy forces. No forces are deployed. Where is he while all this is going on?
This has been testified to by the...
Well, no one knows where he was or how he was involved or who told him there were no forces. Where was he? What did he do? How did he respond? Who told him that you can't deploy forces, and what was his response?
As I said to you, the president was in the White House that day.
So Chris Wallace is like, what? He was on the verge, Chris Wallace, was on the verge of greatness as a journalism. He was on the verge, but he couldn't quite go there. So I'm going to take over from here, from Mr. Wallace. I, part-time talk show host, barely made it out of high school. I'm going to explain to Chris Wallace how he could have gone down in the annals of history as one of the greatest journalists of all time had he only continued the interview in this way. Mr. Pfeiffer, please. Now, I understand that you're speaking for the president, but Mr. Pfeiffer... what I asked you about was not whether or not the president was kept up to date that day. What I asked you about, I didn't ask you anything about that day. What I asked you, Mr. Pfeiffer, and I'll ask you again, where was the president that night?
The question here is not what happened that night. The question is, what are we going to do to move forward and ensure that this doesn't happen again?
Okay, Mr. Pfeiffer, again, to assert that it doesn't matter, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you again, where was the president for the rest of that night?
The president was in the White House that day.
Mr. Pfeiffer, I'm not asking you about that day. The day, we know where he was that day. White House logs show where he was that day. In fact, let's leave the term day aside. Where was the president for the rest of that night?
He was kept up to date throughout the day.
Mr. Pfeiffer again. This is getting to be a little bit uncomfortable, and I'm afraid that I'm beginning to believe that you do not want to tell us where the president was that night.
The president was in the White House that day.
Mr. Pfeiffer, again with the day, I'm specifically trying to drill down on where the president was that night.
The question here is not what happened that night. The question is, what are we going to do to move forward and ensure that this doesn't happen again?
All right, Mr. Pfeiffer. I'm going to give you one last chance. If you do not answer my question, where was the president that night, I am going to get up from this interview. I am going to walk out of this studio thinking that, number one, you're lying to me and you're lying to the American people, and number two, that you are deliberately covering up the whereabouts of the president that night. Mr. Pfeiffer, where was the president that night?
He was kept up to date throughout the day.
See, and folks, at that point, Chris Wallace should have unclipped his microphone and got up and walked off the set. And the cameras go dark, and history has changed, and a crisis at the White House and in our government is averted. Because finally, someone would have been forced to admit that this is the question that Barry Ho does not want to answer. Where was he that night, and what was he doing? And I don't know that the question will ever be asked again, because I think in modern American journalism, Mr. Pfeiffer's replies there count as an answer, which proves that most of the people in journalism are mentally ill or willfully ignorant at the very least, or willing to be lied to their face, willing to be dissembled before in front of God and everyone, and to just leave it. I'm shocked and stunned that this could have been allowed to happen on national television by a man who calls himself a journalist, Mr. Chris Wallace. Derelict in your duty, Mr. Wallace. And certainly not going to be a candidate for any prizes in journalism, at least from the McBurney Institute or the Worldview Council. You certainly won't be on our list because you missed your chance to go down in history as a great journalist. And instead, Chris Wallace, you have allowed the lie to continue, and now it's going to grow, and it's going to devour the president, it's going to devour a good portion of the government, and it could lead America into an irreparable crisis. Why don't you grow up? We don't have time for guitars, boys. I know, I like a good guitar solo as much as the next guy. But we just don't have time. Speaking of what it takes to be a man. Speaking of, are you going to put them away or not, boys? Okay. All right, that's just about enough of that. Whose show is this anyways? All right.
Mine.
I mean, you turn her loose with some audio and now she's out of control. All right. What does it take to be a man? Have you ever considered nettles? Nettles? Are you familiar with nettles? Most of us are not, but I'm going to familiarize you with them. From this story from the Daily Mail out of the United Kingdom, thousands of anti-gay protesters, including Orthodox priests, picketed a gay pride parade in the Republic of Georgia last week, with some of the priests threatening to lash the homosexuals with stinging nettles.
What's a nettle?
Nettles, I believe, and I'm not all that familiar. In fact, I'll bet homosexuals are far more familiar with what nettles are than any of us normal people. But in this case, I believe the nettle is a leather strap with something sharp or chunky at the end of it that you beat somebody with. And so these Orthodox priests are standing, they go to protest this homosexual pride parade, and what this is half-naked homosexuals defiling one another in the streets in front of the Orthodox cathedral. And so the priest comes out with a whip, and he's ready to whip them.
They like it.
Well, that's the problem. See? I don't know if that made it to tape, but let's see here. There was chaos spread throughout the capital of Georgia. Those occupying the street held posters reading, "We don't need Sodom and Gomorrah." Another sign read, "Democracy does not equal immorality." Mm-hmm. Well, I hate to break this to you, my comrades there in Georgia. But democracy inevitably does end up equaling immorality. Why? Because the masses are filthy, unwashed, wicked, and ignorant. They're stupid and selfish. They're murderous, they're bloodthirsty, they're greedy. That's what the majority is. And so democracy, if left to its own devices and allowed to run its course, eventually equals homosexuals defiling themselves in front of your own church. And you can't even whip them. Well, that's what they need is a, well, they need a good whipping just to stop defiling themselves there on the streets in public. But they should be arrested and charged with crimes against nature and against good civil order. Homosexuality is a criminal act. And this priest had the right idea with the whip. The Daily Mail goes on. A homosexual rally in Tbilisi last year was also short-lived and ended in a scuffle. So the priests literally are beating back the queers in Tbilisi and having some success. A little bit encouraged by that. Georgia's authorities apparently had given the green light for the homosexual pride parade to take place. The authorities there in Georgia say that all Georgian citizens, irrespective of their sexuality, are entitled to voice their views in public. Well, that is always a big mistake when governing officials give any legitimacy to criminal behavior, because that means eventually that behavior will destroy those who thought they could tolerate it. Did you follow me on that? The Bible says, do you think you can hold hot coals to your bosom and not get burned? You think you can tolerate criminal behavior like homosexuality and the murder of the innocent through abortion and euthanasia? You think you can tolerate those things as a democratic, nice society? The worshipers of democracy and those who are so nice that they allow people to defile one another and commit crimes in public, they will eventually be consumed by the wickedness they thought they could tolerate. They thought they could be nice, but they're going to end up dead, devoured by the wickedness. Let's see here. Back to the Daily Mail article. Georgia, that's the Republic of Georgia, for those of you who did make it through public high school. It's not just north of Florida and just south of South Carolina. It's elsewhere. Georgia, it's somewhere near Russia. I don't want to be too specific because I like to use these type of items as an opportunity for people to educate themselves. Grab yourself a map, grab yourself a globe, find Georgia, and you'll be a little bit smarter than when you first turned on the broadcast this week. All right, now Georgia, they say, is a traditional Orthodox Christian country where public discussions of sexuality in general tend to be shunned. Lord, what I would not give for a civilization in which discussions of sexuality in general tend to be shunned. The things that these people do to each other and the things that they want to be celebrated are things that should not even be discussed in public. The Daily Mail reports that homosexuality is considered a major deviation from the norm. Yeah. Well, I would agree with that. Not only is it considered a major deviation, it is in fact a major deviation from the norm. That's why we call them deviants. At least us normal people. The few of us, the remnant of sane people left on the planet, know that this is deviance. And the guy standing there holding the nettles and the whip there in front of his church, he knows. He knows from what, where, and how. Let's see. The reporter goes on after he says that homosexuality is considered deviant. He says, as a result, gay people are often targets of abuse and physical violence. Well, you know, you homosexuals, you wouldn't be the target of anything if you wouldn't march in the streets defiling one another and putting your vulgarity in front of other people's children. Okay? If you want to defile yourself in the privacy of your own whatever, I'm not going to come and kick in your door. But when you start marching down the street and putting it in front of my kids, well, I'm reaching for the nettles, all right? At least figuratively. Maybe that's where we'll go on our next vacation, dear. We'll go to Georgia during Gay Pride Week.
Well, California has plenty.
Well, that's true. We could just go to California. Yeah, but there wouldn't be anyone in California to back us up with the nettles. That's true. You know, at least in Tbilisi in there in Georgia, there are a few sane people left who know that when people march down the street publicly advocating criminal defilement, that they need a whipping. That's all. All right. Now, now we'll go to Beijing. This is an odd story. I wasn't sure how I would segue into this, but here we are. Police in central China have detained the 18-year-old organizer of a gay pride march. Yeah, the Fox News, the local Fox affiliate in New York, says that this is a sign of the Chinese government's nervousness over a growing civil society movement and demand for stronger individual rights. So this is another thing that upsets me about modern journalism, is modern journalists have been trained, probably since kindergarten, to link any movement for freedom, justice, human rights, they link that with the queers. That's what the queers are doing now. This is now a civil rights movement, and it's a demand for individual rights, freedom, liberty, things that we all have been taught to support and celebrate. Now that means the right to sodomize one another in public and to be celebrated for it. So it's, folks, it's not a civil rights movement. What it is an eruption of criminality due to a vacuum of spirituality. That's what it is. Has nothing to do with Martin Luther King. It has nothing to do with the abolitionists. It has everything to do with perversion, deviancy, criminal behavior, lust and selfishness, things that should be shunned and kept in the dark shadows in the worst part of town. So anyway, the Chinese have detained this 18-year-old queer. Fox in New York reports that the detention of the 18-year-old underscores the limits the conservative communist government continues to impose, yada, yada, yada. So now, if you're against perversion and deviance, and now you're a conservative, of course. Yeah. If you're against freedom, if you're against individual rights, if you're against civil rights, well, you're part of the conservative communist government. How can you even say that? That's what do you call it when you have a disagreement right there in one? That's an oxymoron. That's an oxymoron, for crying out loud. All right. Chinese society is increasingly accepting of gays and lesbians. Well, of course. Of course. It doesn't take democracy to have a welling up of lust and selfishness and deviant behavior. It can happen whenever the constraints of morality are thrown off by the society. And, of course, the Chinese, well, they kicked God out of everything 75 years ago. They're way ahead of us as far as on the road straight to hell with jet rockets.
Well, and then they're killing a lot of girls.
And they're killing all the girls. Well, so, naturally, a lot of the boys, well,
silently accepting.
That's right. Because the boys want to have somebody to be with. And if there are no girls, well, you can imagine what happens.
Okay,
it's horrifying and disgusting. I know. I'm being told to move on. All right, let's move on. Let's go to the war file. It's from IsraelNationalNews.com. Hundreds of residents of Gush Etzion, south of Jerusalem, were astounded on Monday morning to see an oversized Nazi flag flying next to a mosque in the Arab town of Bet Omar. A resident there, an Israeli, told an Israeli news agency, he said, "I felt as if we were going back 75 years. Losing our hold on the land." He said the Arabs no longer feel the need to hide their murderous tendencies, announcing out loud that they wish to annihilate us. Is it coincidental that we have a rising tide of the celebration of sexual perversion and deviance, the celebration of the murder of innocent children, a celebration of the euthanizing of old, sick, lonely, depressed people? And right alongside that, we have a rising tide of open anti-Semitism, even flying a Nazi flag. I tell you, folks, these are dark times. These are dark times that demand leadership. And there's only one man qualified to lead the ranks in this war, And that man is Jesus Christ. He's the only one qualified. And as for me and my house, we will follow him. But meanwhile, in Syria, the resistance, what do you call them there in Syria? The insurgents, whoever. Well, the Islamists who are trying to topple Assad, well, they're not following Jesus Christ. And I have a symptom that points to that disease. A rebel commander, Abu Sakhar, has gained instant notoriety after footage emerged of him appearing to remove the organs of a pro-Assad fighter and then eating them. So this is a rebel Islamist maniac satanic fighter cutting the guts out of an enemy soldier and eating them on camera and then uploading it to YouTube. But here's what he said, and we should all listen to this. This Syrian cannibal, he warned that if the bloodshed in Syria continues, he said, quote, all Syrian people will be like me, unquote. An ominous warning from a man who, he's participating in it. And I believe the Congress or the NSA or someone in the ruling class has just authorized the United States to ship weapons to this guy and his buddies so that they can overthrow that little rat weasel, Assad, over there in Syria. Well, this just shows you what bad government does, because that little rat weasel, Assad, in Syria, he is an example of bad government and bad religion all combined into one. And what does that produce eventually? Chaos, destruction, death, and suffering. When the rulers are righteous, the people can celebrate. But when the rulers are wicked, the people mourn. And there's a good example. And speaking of unrighteous, wicked leaders, there was an unannual conference on disarmament at the United Nations. This is from the Free Beacon. An unannual conference. It's coming up. It's scheduled to run from late May through June. The Conference on Disarmament, it's called. Iran is to chair the conference this year. Apparently, they do this every year. And this year, apparently, Iran is going to chair the Conference on Disarmament. UN officials, unofficials, we like to call them, say Iran is simply the next country in rotation for the conference chair slot. That's nothing but, you know, it's democracy, you know. Everybody gets their turn. Maybe next year it'll be Syria, and the guy who ate the liver and heart of his enemy will be sitting in the chair there at the Conference on Disarmament. If it's their turn. Now, the U.S. mission to the Un-Ambassador Susan Rice says she will not attend any of the meetings, and she denounced Iran's leadership role as unfortunate and highly inappropriate. Not unlike the career of Susan Rice. And it's the Weekly Worldview. Glad to have you back. We move from one monstrosity to another. Let's go to the government school system with reason number 684 to keep your children or get your children out of the government schools. Stephanie Mickles is a 45-year-old school teacher in Jarrettsville. I believe this is Connecticut, Hartford County. Well, it's either Connecticut or Maryland. It's somewhere there in the general northeast. She's a 45-year-old teacher. Well, she was indicted back in April on a charge of unnatural and perverted... I don't even want to talk about it. The alleged crime involves an allegation of bestiality.
Ew.
And she's a school teacher. And she has been for quite some time.
What?
Yeah. Investigators seized a number of video recordings of the alleged crime.
What's wrong with
this? The alleged bestiality. If you have videotape, is it still alleged? I mean, there's videotape. Mickles is a behavioral specialist with the Hartford County Public Schools. And she has been put on administrative leave without pay.
Oh, God.
While her videos are reviewed by some unfortunate individual in the justice system. And now we move on quickly. Please avert your eyes, ladies and gentlemen. We move on to reason number 685. To get your kids or keep your kids out of the government schools. A Broward reading teacher, this is from the Miami Herald down in Florida, a Broward reading teacher has been suspended for 13 days without pay. The teacher told her 10th grade high school student class about how she lost her virginity. Yeah, she's worked for the district for 26 years, and that's just an average day in an American high school. Now, since these allegations have come up, she has been reassigned to another school in another school district, an alternative school serving at-risk students. I would say that any kid who's been in this lady's class in the last 26 years could be classified as an at-risk student. Anyway, there you go, folks. Reason number 685, sending your children into the godless government schools... it's not optimum. In fact, I think it's a sin. I think it's a sin. And if you are doing it, you need to figure out a way to stop. And if you can't figure out a way, call me. I will try to help you. Okay? And I'm serious about that. Anyone who needs help, I would do my best to help you to try to save your children out of this godless education system that is hell-bent on destroying the country and killing our children. Corrupting, defiling, and eventually killing them. And I know, you say that's hyperbole, but you just wait. When we're able to look back on all this, some future time, and we're able to look at what happened, and we're able to analyze the destructive effect in the lives of these kids, myself included, by the way. I was barely a graduate of a government school. Somehow I recovered, fortunately. So there is hope, and there is help. If you need help, call me. I'll try to help you if I can. All right. Now, the Centers for Disease Control, ironically enough, now says that 1 in 5 U.S. children may have a mental disorder. That's right. The CDC says up to 20% of American children are suffering from mental disorders such as attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, anxiety, depression, and autism. They say it costs up to $250 million a year. It's costing us. Big money. Big money, folks. I don't know why they mention the money. I mean, if you got 1 in 5 kids with a mental disorder, it would seem to me that the money, whatever, that's pretty much, Mr. Pfeiffer call it? A nearly irrelevant fact. Okay, we try to use his words for something positive and constructive. That's a nearly irrelevant fact, the fact that it costs us $250 million. I think I would want to focus on what the hell's going on with the kids. Are you kidding me? We can get to the money later. Could we try to figure out what's going on here? And now when I say what the hell is going on with the kids, I mean that literally. Because there's something hellish going on here. And I know a lot of conservatives would doubt the number. Well, liberals say everything's a disorder. They want to classify everything as a disease. I don't trust these liberals. And I'm no big fan of the CDC. But I can assure you that more than 1 in 5 children in the United States is indeed suffering from a mental disorder. I believe it. I don't know if I agree with these these terms, ADHD, anxiety, depression. I don't know if I would classify them that way, but I tend to be in agreement that there's a lot of mental illness going around, especially among the young. Now, this CDC data, according to CBS in Atlanta, was collected between 94 and 2011, shows that the number of children being diagnosed with mental disorders has been steadily growing. Now, the study did not conclude exactly why. One doctor who assisted with the study says it could be a host of environmental factors, including chemical exposure, poverty, and other things, social.
It's always a poverty, right?
Yeah, it's all poverty, right. Yeah, that's why Abraham Lincoln turned out to be such a mental deficient. Right? That's why Harry Truman could barely put his shoes on. Poverty. Come on. Why George Washington Carver was barely able to get up and string three words together in the morning. Poverty. Get out of here with that. Chemical exposure. Well, I suppose there could be some chemical exposure. I'm no expert in that area. But what about godless parenting? What about no training and no discipline? What about factors like an education establishment that teaches kids that they are merely the result of a chance amalgamation of various proteins and that their ancestors were animals and that truth is relative and that their eternal destiny is unknown? We're teaching kids that their eternal destiny is as unknown as the whereabouts of Barry Ho on the night of September 11th, 2012. And when you leave that much to chance in the mind of a child, you leave that much confusion and that lack of surety in their eternal destiny, in their eternal destiny and in their own being, you are planting the seeds of mental illness. And folks, here in America, we've been sowing the seeds of mental illness in our children for the better part of a century through the government schools. And there's another term in the Bible. It says, you sow the wind and you will reap the whirlwind. And this is a whirlwind of mental illness and depression and confusion amongst our children. And so what do? We put them on Ritalin and drugs. We put them on low-dose amphetamines. That's how we'll solve the problem. Anyway, I think the topics that I think that the items that I outlined, godless parenting, no training, no discipline, evolution. We don't know where you came from. We don't know where you're going. We don't know if anything's really true. And we don't know if there's a God. In fact, we're pretty sure there's not. And if there is, we don't like him. That's what they teach the kids. That's how you end up with mentally ill, depressed, kids full of anxiety and all of that. That's where I think it comes from. And someday we'll be able to look back on all this. At some future point, we'll be able to analyze all the data. And we'll find out if it was chemical exposure and poverty or general godlessness and perversion that caused our kids to start losing their minds. That's what we'll find out someday. All right. Now, from the politics file, Dateline Washington, the Associated Press... What do we have here? States should cut their threshold for drunk driving by nearly half, saying now that a 0.05 blood alcohol content should be punished rather than 0.08. I remember when they lowered this from 0.10 to 0.08. Now they want to go down to 0.05. Federal Safety Board recommended that that states go for the 0.05. That's about one drink for a woman weighing less than 120 pounds. It's about two drinks for the average-sized man. The safety board says new approaches are needed to combat drunken driving and raise more revenue. Oh, I made up that raise more revenue part, but it's absolutely true. Because when states lowered it from 0.10 to 0.08, they saw fines and the coffers filling with money. And they thought, well, why not go down to 0.05? More money and everyone will be safe. Bunch of criminals, right? We got a bunch of criminals running the government. That's all about money, and it's not about combating drunkenness. They celebrate and they promote drunkenness, but what they want to do is bust people and make a lot of money through fines. All right. Cops in Chicago, ladies and gentlemen, from the domestic tranquility file, the Chicago Police Department is taking seriously a purported directive from a Chicago street gang to kill members of law enforcement The police there say that the gangs have created a so-called hit squad to go after police officers. Gang members intend to coax police officers into chasing them into alleys or gangways. Once inside, other gang members will shoot the police. So, folks, the wickedness and the criminal behavior that we have been told we have to tolerate is coming back, and it'll kill us all eventually if we don't stop it. And there's a good chance this summer in Chicago, it's going to kill some police officers. Anyway, but they're on guard there in Chicago. They're trying to get ready to fight the gangsters. Finally, from Belize City, which I believe is in Belize, which is not in New Jersey, somewhere else. Grab a map, educate yourself. A construction company has essentially destroyed one of Belize's largest Mayan pyramids with backhoes and bulldozers to extract the rocks for a road building project. Yes, what's that? Well, there you go. See, only a small portion of the pyramid mound was left standing. This was the Nomul Pyramid and Temple Platform, which date back about 2,300 years ago. Yeah. Now, that temple, which was formerly used as a pagan sacrifice altar, thanks to this backhoe operator and the construction company, the rocks will be redeemed, and they will now finally be used for good as a useful road for maybe another 2,300 years. Thank you very much to the backhoe operator. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, and as always, my other brother, Darrell, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.